There's a certain irony, I suppose, in speaking about peace. Chris and I were talking about this coming down the road, and we were doing a little bit of arm wrestling over who would get to do peacemakers. He had some thoughts, I had some thoughts. And then it feels like this week we've kind of been in a snow globe that's been shaken up quite, just shaken, and so everything is still settling. And so at some levels it was a good, it's forced some ideas for myself into trying to actually make them a way of living. And so tonight I want to reflect a little bit on peace and maybe what Jesus was saying when he said, blessed are those, or good news for those who bring peace. Blessed are those who work for peace. Blessed are those who are peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. It was interesting to me as I looked through the definition in the Webster Dictionary of peace, and there was like, I think in the end, kind of 16 variants of peace, and then of what it meant, what it looked like with peace in action. And most of the things around peace were like the normal non-warring condition of a nation or group of people. It's all about the absence of conflict or strife. And then as you kind of move down, the very last definition that I ran across was to make peace, to be reconciled with one. And I found that interesting because if you look at the Hebrew word for peace or the Greek word for peace, it's almost like those things are reversed. That at the very top is this idea about all things being pulled together back into one, completeness, wholeness, well-being, the rejoining. And then from there, it breaks into things like absence or the end of strife and this sense of quietness or rest. And so that's kind of an interesting, it's interesting how we, in our way, think of peace. And then so we, to kind of hear about how Jesus is speaking on peace is important to note because peace really is more than just an absence of strife or an absence of conflict. That actually, when Jesus was speaking of peace, when God was speaking about his shalom all through the story of the people of Israel, it was always in mind of this coming together. And that shalom, or the peace of God, encompassed a very broad spectrum. That it had to do with the relationship between God and his people, but it had to do with the relationship between people and people, the relationship with people and themselves, and the relationship with people and physically creation, and how all of these things fit together, how all of these things are one. And that the story of Shalom, the story of Jesus coming, is all about setting at one again. And so I think it would be fair to say that peace and reconciliation are purposes of God. However, we live in a world with huge conflicts. And that seems, I think, a tangle that you can track all the way to the roots of humanity, where we see this ingrained habit of becoming self-absorbed, self-centered, self-serving, which in return creates divisions between individuals, nations, ethnic groups, classes, religions, and so forth. And so in all of this is this deep fracturing of peace, of the shalom of God. And so sometimes for me, it's hard to believe that peace, true peace, will or can ever get any real traction in our world. When I turn on the TV, or when I read the internet, or when I see these conflicts, when I see the things that are happening around the world, sometimes it's hard for me to believe that peace is actually being generated, that things are coming together. And when, as we were kind of batting these ideas around, Chris and I, and then Brendan and I were talking, and he had a teaching that he did for Advent a few years back, and he forwarded me his teaching just as a way to kind of get some thoughts rolling, or maybe he thought I was going to be terrible tonight and he thought I should just use his. But either way, this is what Brennan writes a little bit about peacemaking. He says this: so what does peacemaking look like? And he says this about himself: there was a time when I thought of peacemaking in the very narrow terms of conflict resolution and reconciliation. But as I have grown in my understanding of shalom, of peace, I have come to appreciate that peacemaking involves much more than resolving conflicts. And so he would like us to consider embracing a more expansive vision of peacemaking. If shalom is all about the flourishing of all creation, then I would propose that peacemaking can encompass anything we do in the name of Jesus that contributes to the healing and health and well-being and flourishing of creation. And we see that Jesus really reinforces this as he begins his teaching, as he begins his ministry. You might even see it in terms of Jesus giving a manifesto as he gives out these beatitudes. And in that is this: blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God, or you will be called a child of God. And I think it's interesting because initially, as I was thinking about peacemaking, I was really thinking about peace and what does peace look like and how do we engage in peace. But then it occurred to me that I should maybe read the whole sentence, because why is child of God significant? What about peacemaking and being known as children of God? Why is that significant? And I think that this idea of child of God really goes hand in hand with reconciliation, that Jesus comes to restore what's broken, that he comes to repair relationships. And that if for a person who is following after Jesus, it's this invitation to participate in this kingdom, this peace, this restoration coming to earth. And so as you read that whole sentence comprehensively, it seems to suggest to me anyhow, that actually it would be impossible to follow Jesus and not work as a peacemaker. But the two are linked together, that one, to be a child of God, is automatically all about reconciliation, restoring, rebuilding, which is peace. And so the two kind of mirror one another. I was reading through James a while ago, and I remembered as I was thinking about this that James talks about peace in his letter. And I'd like to read just a little bit from that. If you'd like to follow along, it's on page 1840 in the Bibles that you'll find in the pews. And he starts off this chapter 3 about talking about the tongue and about how the tongue has the power to both praise and to curse, to build and to tear down. And that in a way, it's almost like this acknowledgement that we as people have an instrument that we can either use to build or to tear down, that this tongue is an instrument in that sense, and that what we use a tongue for is then later seen as a metaphor for what we're sowing, what we're putting out there, and that what we put out there eventually comes back. And so I'd like to start on, I should have brought my glasses. Shoot. I think it's 13, yes, where it says, true wisdom comes from God. So I'd like to start reading there. It says, if you are wise and understand God's way, prove it by living an honorable life, doing good works with the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you are bitterly jealous and there is selfish ambition in your heart, don't cover up the truth with boasting and lying. For jealousy and selfishness are not God's kind of wisdom. Such things are earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and evil of every kind. But the wisdom from above is first of all pure. It's also peace-loving, gentle at all times, and willing to yield to others. It is full of mercy and good deeds. It shows no favoritism and is always sincere. And those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. Or you could read that, will reap a harvest of good things or of justice. So here's this interesting juxtaposition, because as I began this, I was saying that you could track backwards and see that the breaking of shalom, the breaking of peace, came out of this self-absorption. But the way that peace is restored is through this connecting with God at the center, of allowing God, who is creator, to first of all heal and begin to restore us as people, but then to join in that process of that renewing by participating in the kingdom coming here to earth. But even in reading that, sometimes it's still hard to believe that peace is growing. And I was thinking of what it would be like to hear these words if I was sitting there on the hill with Jesus. And then it got me thinking of different times in history when perhaps people were hearing these words of peace, but maybe experienced them in a dissonance. And I wanted to just, I think they're familiar, but I'd like to just read them as just a way to get us thinking a little bit about that. Gandhi, in his book, The Story of My Experiments with Truth, writes this: "When every hope is gone, when helpers fail and comforts flee, I experience that help arrives somehow, from I know not where. Supplication, worship, prayer are no superstition. They are more real acts than the acts of eating, drinking, sitting, or walking. It is no exaggeration to say that they, the thoughts of God, alone are real, and all else is unreal." So I was trying to think of what that would feel like to feel oppressed, and then to have this person tell me that hope is going to come. I don't know how it's going to happen, but trust me, it's going to happen. Pray a little bit harder. I would feel like maybe I was being patted on the head. Martin Luther King Jr. talked about a dream that he had, a dream that sons of former slaves and sons of former slave owners would be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood, a dream that the heat of oppression would be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice, a dream that his four children could live in a nation where they wouldn't be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character, a dream where black boys and girls would be able to join hands with little white boys and girls as sisters and brothers. And he said that this is our hope. This is a faith that I go back to the South with. And with this faith, we'll be able to hew out of mountains of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we'll be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we'll be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. And I would wonder how that would sound to hear these words where I was watching friends or family being beaten or lynched, killed, being pushed off the side, being treated less than human. With these words, would this dream actually make me feel inspired? Or how would I feel if I heard the words of Jesus? Blessed are the peacemakers. And then later, to teach a little bit more of what it would look like to be a peacemaker, that peacemaking was about turning the other cheek, about going an extra mile, about giving more than I was asked for. Would I feel like that was actually going to solve the problems of the oppression of the Roman Empire? And sometimes these stories, these words, as I read them, they feel a little bit like platitudes, like the safe answer. A safe answer that seems to fit in the context of a church gathering, but falls short as I move out into my living, my engaging with the world. Lori's been reading the book of Hebrews lately, and in our family, we've been working out some issues and working out some of these things around peace for our own family. And she said an interesting thing, that she was reminded in reading Hebrews about the definition of faith, and this faith being a conviction of something that's not seen, and she said, or maybe that would never be seen in a lifetime. And then I started thinking about these stories stacked on top of each other and thinking about seeds. And knowing in my own life that I like to see things happen rapidly, change quickly, that I'd like to be able to see this, like if peace is going to happen, I'd like to see it happen over the next week or month or maybe even a year. That would be a long time. But the reality is that for many people, this conviction, this hoping, this faith is actually something that roots them to something that they may not actually ever see in their own lifetime. And then that seemed to change things for me a little bit. It made me think that maybe it's more important to be concerned about what I'm putting out there, about what I'm sowing, the seeds that I'm sowing, than it is to be concerned about outcome. In other words, I'm reluctant to invest in something that I think maybe won't actually come to fruition. But it seems here, though at some levels and on some days not super satisfying, super, I shouldn't say that, but that's how our daughter talks, super everything, super sweet, super something. Maybe Carrie taught her that, I'm not sure, but anyhow. But that there's this element in which I need to be more concerned about what I'm putting out. Because what I put out eventually is going to come back. It's going to be harvested. And I do know in my own life from personal experience that when I plant seeds out of anger, when I plant seeds out of revenge, when I plant seeds based on these kind of darker sides of myself, but that comes back in a way that actually creates more tangling, that in the end I'm going to have to go work even harder and to work at repairing things more than if I would just begin to work initially at finding ways to sow seeds flowing out of who God is. And so there's this element now in which I'm learning, I'm trying to live into this idea of seeing with my heart rather than seeing with my eyes. That working at, in my own life, living into the peace of Christ, to then work at being the peace of Christ. And so this, I'm convinced that this peace that's being spoken of, that this peace of all things being made new is not, in Jesus' mind, simple optimism or an irrepressible idealism. And it's not wishful thinking or a fantasy or a daydream. And peace is not based on what I see when I turn on the TV, the rising and falling of life's events. But rather, peace is Jesus being present, living a life that is guided by his promise, no matter where I find myself, understanding and trusting, being rooted to the vision of all things being made new. Jesus came to us in the flesh to make humanity itself new, to create fresh possibilities for being at peace with God and with each other and with our creation. And he did this, and he continues to do this, by summoning us to be with him. This coming of Jesus is rooted in restoring the fracture and brokenness of peace. And this coming of peace is something tied to the hope of Jesus making all things new. And so I am working at learning what it means to rejoice in the good news of Christ coming into our space, though sometimes I don't always see his peace prevailing, to continue to sow seeds of peace. I've been reading a book by, I can't remember his name now, Rowan, who is it, Brennan? Thank you, Rowan Williams. Brennan has my book, but the book is called Tokens of Trust. And this is what he writes. It's an interesting thing that he notices in this idea of peace. And he's thinking in particular on as we read through the Gospel of John. And if you remember, right before, during the Last Supper, right before they move out to the garden, when Jesus is betrayed, He has gathered his disciples, and he's telling them, he's sketching out what's going to happen. He's sketching out how things are going to unfold as he has to go away, and that he breathes into his disciples the Spirit. And so this is what Rowan Williams is writing about. He says, in this context, he breathes into his disciples his Spirit, the breath, this is Jesus, of his life, so they become equipped to do what he does and to speak with his voice to God and to the world. By breathing into the disciples, he sets up a chain of human contact coming down to our own day, a chain of voices and faces in which Jesus is active. The personal and the direct contact with Jesus is there before the crucifixion, but it is renewed in the resurrection and then taken to a new level as Jesus equips his friends, his followers, to take responsibility for him and his Father, to be his body in this world. It is a great metaphor of the New Testament. Contact with human beings who have received the breath of Jesus' life is contact with Jesus, as specific human beings pass on the mystery of God to each other across the ages. To meet a Christian, to meet a follower of Christ in whom the Spirit is working, is to be a contemporary with Jesus Christ. And I have always appreciated at the Connection, or as long as I can remember, I know it hasn't been the whole time, that we always transition our teaching, our response time around the table. Because the table is where we are reminded of all of these things coming together, that we are a community working this out together. We're reminded of what Jesus does and did and continues to do for us. As we tear off the bread, as we dip it in the juice, we are remembering, we are partaking. We are being pulled into this body of Christ. And then we move away and we are to represent Christ, to be his hands and his feet, to be peacemakers, to sow seeds of peace. I can't remember when I ran across this poem, but I'd like to just finish. This is a poem written by Ryan McCormick, and he frames, I think, this well by using the metaphor of being trees. And so I'll read this poem, and then I'll pray, and then we're going to just have a time of silence, and then the musicians will come, and then as you feel led, you can come to the table and break off a piece of the bread, dip it in the juice. The bread is free of gluten and all stuff, but still holds together and tastes good. So take a big piece. There's a sanitizer at the front and at the back. We just ask that if you don't mind using a bit of that, and then when you grab the bread, it's, you know, good for everyone. So let me read this poem called We Are Trees. He says, what if we were more like trees, converting carbon dioxide and releasing oxygen? We live in a bite-back, one-up world where anger, bitterness, resentment, prejudice, and violence are the soul's carbon dioxide. We could receive curses, then give blessings. We could get manipulated and then speak the truth. We could be spat upon, then respond with grace. We could be struck, but not strike back. The things about trees is that they need to absorb carbon dioxide in order to live and grow. We could do the same. We could absorb hate, discrimination, judgment, and harm, and use forgiveness to demonstrate healing and love and peace. This would free us from having to avenge our own injustices and allow us to open our arms, welcoming those who are often unwelcome and unwanted. Photosynthesis and forgiveness are miracles of life. Without them, this world is a hostile place.